my wife and I had this spot picked out in the Cascades in Washington State, a secluded RV campground named Cascade Meadows. We had always heard about its stunning beauty and peaceful spot. Only about an hour's drive from the German-like village of Leavenworth, it promised both isolation and a touch of civilization not too far away. For the first few days, it was exactly as we had hoped. Our mornings consisted of hiking through paths surrounded by evergreens and marveling at the nearby waterfalls. Our afternoons would be lazy, with us preparing meals together or me fishing in the nearby creek. As the sun set, the sheer brilliance of the night sky took our breath away. Shooting stars, constellations, and the Milky Way became our nightly entertainments. And the silence, only broken by the chirping of crickets and the occasional hoots of an owl, was simply serene. But around the fourth day, something shifted. My wife started to have this lasting feeling that we weren't truly alone. While we joked that maybe a deer was stalking us, or perhaps a curious raccoon, that feeling of being observed grew stronger. I noticed it too, especially during our evening barbecues. Every time I went around the RV to fetch something, it felt like eyes were on me. And then, there were the noises. Soft, distant howls began interrupting our peaceful nights. They were strange, not like the howls of coyotes we were familiar with. We tried to brush it off, rationalizing it as probably just the wind or some distant animal. But with each passing night, the sounds grew closer, louder, and creepy. They didn't seem like they were part of nature's usual chorus anymore. It wasn't long before we noticed other signs. Upon returning from our hikes, our campsite often seemed out of order. A chair knocked over, our water canister moved a few feet from where we had left it, and on one occasion, our food stash tampered with. We debated over whether it could have been a bear, but bears weren't common in this part of the Cascades. But the most unnerving incidents involved the rocks. Small pebbles would often land close to our RV, especially when we were outside. It felt too deliberate to be a coincidence. Yet, whenever we tried to spot where they came from, the surrounding woods seemed devoid of any movement. The tension started to weigh on us. Days that were supposed to be filled with relaxation became filled with unease. Conversations were cut short by strange noises, and our nights became restless. I'd find myself staying awake longer, ears straining for any sound out of the ordinary. On the ninth day, as we prepared to turn in for the night, the unexpected happened. A larger rock suddenly thudded against the side of our RV. It startled both of us, and our initial confusion turned into genuine concern. This was no random act of nature. Someone or something was out there, intentionally trying to get our attention. We decided to keep a low profile that night, dimming the lights and discussing our next move. While the thought of evacuating was tempting, we also speculated that it could be just some nearby campers up to mischief. As the hours dragged on, every creak and rustle from outside made us more nervous. Whatever was out there was close, and it seemed to be closing in. The feeling of dread hung heavily in the air, making sleep near impossible. The events of the past few days played in our minds, trying to piece together the puzzle. We felt trapped, isolated, and on edge. Morning couldn't come soon enough, but we were yet to face the worst of our fears. The morning brought both relief and our greatest fears to life. With the first light of dawn lighting up the sky, we decided it was time to make our move. Quickly, I turned the key in the RV's ignition, but as it roared to life, we felt the vehicle jolt. The wheels were spinning, churning up the soft, moist earth beneath them. Panic threatened to overtake me as visions of us being stranded played in my mind. Suddenly, out of the thick canopy of trees, a rock, much larger than the others we'd seen, hurtled through the air. Time felt like it slowed down as it crashed into the passenger side window. The sound of shattering glass was deafening. My wife screamed, but the noise was cut short as the rock struck her face. The force of the impact left her dazed and bleeding. With adrenaline pumping through my veins, I managed to maneuver the RV out of the rut. But just as I was beginning to feel a sign of hope, an incredible force rammed into the side of the vehicle. The sheer power of the blow threatened to tip us over, and for a heart-stopping moment, I thought we would be flipped onto our side. I regained my composure, quickly checked on my wife, and without hesitation floored the gas, driving the RV in reverse. Every instinct screamed at me to put as much distance between us and whatever was terrorizing us. But as I braked to switch the gear and change direction, another rock, more massive than the first, collided with the windshield. Splintered glass exploded inward, showering me with shards that stung my face and arms. Blinking away the pain and blood, I caught a blurred glimpse of something extraordinary. Just at the edge of the tree line stood a figure, large, towering, and bipedal. It was outlined against the emerging daylight, covering in what looked like tangled fur. Its stature was scary and impressive. A deep fear settled deep in my gut. The legends, it seemed, might be grounded in terrifying reality. With a heightened sense of panic, I gave the gas everything, and the RV bolted ahead. However, our nightmare wasn't over. From behind, rocks continued to rain down on our vehicle, each thud making me flinch, fearing that another window would shatter or that our engine would be hit. The road ahead was rough and uneven, but the dense forest began to thin as we approached the edges of Cascade Meadows. Every turn, every jolt, heightened my anxiety, but with every passing mile, the attack of rocks diminished. By the time we reached the main road leading to Leavenworth, the terror began to fade, replaced by a huge relief. My wife started to regain consciousness, confusion and pain clear in her eyes. But there was no time to explain, no time to process. We needed to get to safety, to distance ourselves from the inexplicable horror we'd experienced. Arriving in Leavenworth felt like crossing into another world, one of safety and civilization. Yet the scars of that day, both physical and emotional, would remain with us forever. The peaceful beauty of Cascade Meadows had turned into a haunting memory, forever ruined by an encounter with the unknown. The wilderness, as we learned, held secrets far more profound and terrifying than we'd ever imagined. So, it was about 7 months ago that I had this deeply unsettling experience at the Grand Canyon National Park. I'd heard all the stories about people mysteriously going missing there. I mean, yeah, some might have just been lost due to bad preparation or accidents, but the sheer number? It kind of piqued my curiosity. I thought, why not use my 2-week vacation from work to explore the area and see if I can find any clues or maybe even some explanation behind these stories. Setting up at the Mather campground near the South Rim, I remember feeling this weird mix of excitement and anxiety. The Grand Canyon, with its raw beauty and vastness, can be intimidating all on its own. The days were mostly spent hiking, looking for anything out of the ordinary. About 3 days in, that's when the first odd thing happened. I returned to my campsite after a day out to find a light blue women's scarf draped over my tent. A little confused, I looked around, hoping maybe someone was nearby. Maybe they'd misplaced it while walking. But there were no footprints, no sign of anything having been around my site. And trust me, the soil was soft enough to leave some marks. 2 days later, another item appeared. It was a small leather-bound journal, right at the entrance of my tent. The pages were worn out, but no writing on any of them. Again, no signs of any person. No footprints, no noise, just the journal. There's something deeply unsettling about finding a personal item like that in the middle of nowhere, with no signs of its owner. The Yucay Point was where I had one of the most puzzling experiences. I was there, early morning, watching the sun paint hues of orange and pink over the canyon. As I was about to leave, I noticed a pair of hiking boots neatly placed by the edge. It looked as if someone had taken them off to maybe feel the ground beneath their feet, but there wasn't a soul in sight. The sixth day was... I still can't explain it. I was deep into the Bright Angel Trail, and I came across a backpack hanging on a tree branch. Out of sheer curiosity and maybe a bit of concern, I opened it up. Inside, a camera with its last picture of the very spot I was standing on, but taken at night. Again, eerily absent were any signs of the person who might have owned it. The next 2 days were quiet. No unexpected findings, but the serenity was short-lived. I remember hiking up to Maricopa Point, and there, buried slightly under some sand, I found a single silver locket. It was the kind that held photographs. I opened it, expecting maybe a picture of the owner. But instead, there was an old black and white photo of the Grand Canyon itself, taken from a viewpoint I couldn't recognize. Day 9 involved a hike to the Ua'a Point on the South Kaibab Trail. Gorgeous spot, absolutely worth the trek. And as much as I wanted to soak in its beauty, I couldn't. Right there, in the middle of the path, were a bunch of children's drawings. Colorful, innocent, depicting families and the canyon. But who'd leave something like that there? And why? On the 10th day, a storm rolled in. The winds were fierce and the rain was torrential. Most would stay indoors, but something compelled me to go out, to face the storm. Maybe it was the curiosity or the weight of the past days, but out at the plateau point, amidst the rain and thunder, stood a lone umbrella, opened, rooted to the spot, facing the raging river below, with no one around to hold it. The entire experience had deeply shaken me. I couldn't help but think of all the items, all the memories I'd stumbled upon. Each one was possibly a fragment of someone's story. Someone who might never be found. I wasn't the same person who had excitedly set out on this vacation. I had changed. The canyon, with all its mystery, had left a permanent mark on me. On my return, I couldn't let go. I spent countless hours scouring the internet, reading articles, trying to understand more about the disappearances at the Grand Canyon. And, well, the more I dug, the more I wish I hadn't. There were accounts of people who had vanished without a trace, their last known locations being the same spots I had wandered through. I came across a New York Post investigation that left me stunned. The Grand Canyon wasn't just a tourist attraction. It had a more sinister reputation. According to the article, from 2018 through February 2023, there had been at least 6 people found dead, and a whopping 56 persons who went missing. I could barely process the numbers. That meant 56 stories, 56 families, 56 sets of loved ones who were left searching, waiting, and hoping. With every account I read, a chill ran down my spine. Many of these stories eerily resonated with the things I had found. The scarf, the boots, the journal. Were they connected? The idea seemed impossible, but I couldn't dismiss it. The canyon held secrets, and I had barely scratched the surface. Determined, I reached out to local communities, historians, and indigenous tribes. Some were tight-lipped, speaking in hushed tones, while others shared tales of the canyon's power and spirits. Some spoke of sacred spots within the canyon, while others believed that the very land had a consciousness, reacting to those who tread upon it with disrespect or malintent. A retired park ranger I met online had his theory. Over the years, he'd observed a pattern. Many of those who went missing were solo travelers just like me. Curiosity, he believed, wasn't just a trait, but a lure. The canyon, in its vastness, drew people in, teasing, beckoning, but not always letting go. By the end of my research, I had notebooks filled with accounts, theories, and data. I even considered writing a book, hoping to give voice to the silent stories. Maybe in a way, it was my attempt to make sense of the insensible, to provide an explanation for the unexplained. However, deep down, a thought kept gnawing at me. What if I'd been one of the statistics? What if I had been added to the list of the missing? I was often gripped by the memory of that storm-tossed night at Plateau Point. Was the canyon reaching out to me? Had I nearly joined the ranks of the Grand Canyon's lost? Today, my friends often ask why I've become so obsessed with the Grand Canyon. To them, I laugh it off, saying it's just a project or a possible book idea. But in the quiet moments, when I'm alone, I often think back to that two-week trip and shudder. I had walked a line between the known and the unknown, and I'll forever be haunted by the question, how close did I come to becoming one of the Grand Canyon's mysteries? 2 years ago, I was working as a park ranger at Yosemite National Park. It's a place brimming with awe-inspiring natural beauty, stretching over 1,100 square miles of deep valleys, vast meadows, and dense forests. At first, I felt fortunate to be there, surrounded by breathtaking landscapes and frequently spotting wildlife. But one evening changed everything for me. Everything had this cool silver look because of the moon that night. While on a routine patrol near Glacier Point, an eerie sound cut through the gentle hum of nature. A distant, faint scream of what seemed like a woman. Initially, I thought it might have been an animal. But then, a few minutes later, I heard it again. This time, unmistakably closer and laced with terror. I pulled a patrol vehicle to the side of the road and cautiously stepped out. The sound seemed to come from the direction of the woods off to my right. Flashing my flashlight into the thick underbrush, I yelled, asking if someone was there and if they were hurt. It felt like the forest just swallowed up my voice. As I strained to hear a response, the noise of snapping twigs and rustling bushes broke the silence. Heart pounding, I saw a figure darting through the trees. As she drew nearer, I could see her better. A woman with blood smeared across her face and clothes torn, looking utterly disheveled. She ran straight into my arms, gasping for breath and clearly in distress. Between sobs, she told me how she had been held captive in some sort of underground chamber, which she described as a torture room. She had somehow managed to escape when her captors got distracted. The mere thought that something so sinister existed in the park was petrifying. But there was no time to dwell on it. We had to get her to safety. As I helped her to my patrol vehicle, I felt a sudden and chilling realization that we weren't alone. Shadows moved in the woods around us, and it became clear that members of the family she had described were close by. They emerged from the forest, their faces full of rage, barely looking like humans. There was a man, a woman, and what seemed to be their teenage son. The dread in the woman's eyes spoke volumes about how dangerous this trio was. The gravity of our predicament became painfully clear. If I didn't act fast, we wouldn't make it out of there. Using the only weapon I had, the element of surprise, I threw my flashlight hard at the approaching sun, momentarily blinding and confusing him. Simultaneously, I grabbed the terrified woman by the hand and made a run for the vehicle. My heart was racing as we sped off, with the monstrous family not too far behind. Driving through the winding roads of Yosemite, adrenaline pumping through my veins, I headed straight for the nearest ranger station. We made it safely, but the impact of that night lingered long after. The woman, later identified as Monica, had been missing for a few days before her traumatic experience came to an end. And while the authorities launched a manhunt for the deranged family, they were never found. The days that followed were a blur of police interviews, debriefings, and counseling sessions. Monica and I were constantly surrounded by officers and therapists, all trying to make sense of the traumatic event we'd been through. The park rangers combed the woods near Glacier Point, and though they found the entrance to the underground chamber, the family had cleared out, leaving no trace of where they might have gone next. Sleep became rare. Every little rustle got me thinking of that night. Yosemite didn't feel like my safe haven after that. Monica, for her part, was taken to a trauma center outside the park for intensive therapy and recovery. The media got wind of the story, and it became national news. Journalists swarmed the park, seeking interviews and hoping for a glimpse of the mysterious underground chamber. I declined all interview requests. The last thing I wanted was to relive that night in front of cameras. Everyone at work was super understanding. It turns out some of them had their own wild experiences in the park. It's easy to forget that such pristine beauty can sometimes hide the darkest of human secrets. The park's chief ranger, Officer Martinez, took it upon himself to make sure I was coping, regularly checking in and suggesting I take some time off. It was during one of these conversations with Officer Martinez that the idea of a career switch came to me. He shared the story of his cousin, who had transitioned from park ranger duties to wildlife photography after a close encounter with a bear. It sounded like an opportunity to be close to nature, but at a distance that felt safer and more controlled. After a few months of contemplation, I decided to leave my position at Yosemite and pursue a new path. The terrifying experience had instilled in me a desire to capture the beauty of the wild without the inherent dangers that came with patrolling it. I moved to the Pacific Northwest, taking up a course in wildlife photography and finding solace in the stillness of the camera lens. Monica, on the other hand, moved east, wanting to put as much distance between herself and the park as possible. We kept in touch, our bond forever cemented by that one horrifying night. She became an advocate for trauma victims, using her story to help others find their way out of the darkness. I can't believe it's been 2 years, but that night still disturbs me deeply. Every time I capture a breathtaking sunset or a majestic creature in its natural habitat, I am reminded of why I made the switch. Nature, for all its beauty, can sometimes have a dark side, but it's up to us to find the light in it. The deranged family was never caught, their identities and motives remaining a mystery. But one thing is clear to me: evil can lurk in the most unexpected places. And while Yosemite will always hold a special place in my heart, it's a chapter of my life I've decided to close, looking forward to brighter days and a new beginning. It was our annual family camping trip in the Grand Tetons. Just my wife, our 4-year-old daughter Hannah, and myself. We were having a great time, hiking easy trails during the day and telling stories by the campfire at night. On the third day, we took the same easy hiking trail as the day before. Hannah was walking just a few feet ahead of us, chatting and singing happily. We stopped for a quick snack break in a sunny clearing, and Hannah wandered over to look at some flowers. When we turned back from our packs, Hannah had disappeared. We searched all around frantically, but she was simply gone without a trace. We searched all around for over an hour, calling her name until our voices were hoarse. We retraced our steps back down the trail, thinking she might have tried to head back, but there was no sign of her anywhere. We had to hike back down the mountain to notify the rangers as the sun started to set. I'll never forget the panic gripping my heart, knowing our daughter was out there somewhere in the growing darkness. By the time we made it back to the ranger station, it was nightfall. A search party was quickly assembled, and groups headed out with flashlights and dogs to comb the woods. But after several hours, they still found no trace of Hannah. As the hours slipped by, I prayed harder than I've ever prayed in my life. Images of her lost, injured, or worse, flashed through my mind, and I begged God to keep her safe. We joined the search ourselves, refusing to rest while our little girl was still missing. Our voices grew even more hoarse from endlessly calling out for her. The woods echoed with her name, but only silence answered. As the sun started to rise, the rangers insisted we go back and try to get some sleep. We reluctantly agreed, collapsing in despair and exhaustion without our daughter. I couldn't sleep, replaying everything in my mind, trying to figure out what happened. Had someone taken her? Had she tried to find her way back alone and gotten hurt? Why hadn't she answered our calls? The not knowing was agony. As morning broke, the search continued, but without any clues, hope was fading fast. The search stretched on as the sun crawled across the sky. We forced down some food and coffee, trying to keep up our strength, though my stomach was tied in knots. Around midday, we got word that a helicopter crew had spotted something promising on a ridge high above the valley. My heart seized, dreading and hoping at the same time. A small team hiked to the remote location indicated by the helicopter. The hours of waiting for word were torture. Finally, the radio crackled. They had found Hannah. She was alive, laying unconscious but breathing on a rocky outcropping. We sobbed with relief as the rescue climbers carefully brought our little girl down the mountainside. At the ranger station, the EMTs confirmed Hannah was miraculously uninjured. She began to stir just as we arrived, opening her eyes and calling for mommy and daddy. We smothered her with hugs and kisses, overwhelmed to have her back in our arms. But Hannah had no memory of what happened after picking the flowers. How she got miles away and hundreds of feet up remained an impenetrable mystery. The days and weeks after were baffling. Despite multiple doctors' visits and tests, no medical explanation could be found for Hannah's lost time and relocation. Physically, she was totally healthy, but she could recall nothing of those hours. She would grow upset when we pressed for any details, begging us to stop asking. I went back several times to scour the nearby area where she was found, looking for clues. But there were no footprints, disturbed vegetation, or signs of a fall. It was as if she had simply materialized on that ledge. My mind churned through outrageous possibilities. Paranormal phenomena, wild animals carrying her unharmed, divine intervention, but nothing quite fit. We eventually stopped seeking answers. Hannah seemed untouched by the ordeal, happily playing and chatting as if it had never happened. She remains our miracle child, and we celebrate each day together as a gift. but a small part of me still wonders what really occurred on that mountain. I've come to accept that it will forever remain an unsolved mystery. Just having Hannah home safe is enough. It was a warm summer morning when my husband Tom and I decided to go camping up in the mountains. We loaded up our old reliable tent and sleeping bags into the back of our SUV and headed out just as the sun was rising over the horizon. The drive up the winding mountain roads took a couple hours, but soon enough we found a nice secluded spot to set up for the night. The afternoon passed quickly as Tom got a fire going and I set up our tent before the sun went down. We ate a simple dinner of hot dogs roasted over the fire, the smoke keeping away any mosquitoes that might have bothered us. After eating, Tom and I relaxed next to the fire, gazing up at the brilliant stars coming out overhead. We chatted softly about our plans for the weekend and reminisced about other camping trips we'd taken here over the years. I always felt so peaceful out here in nature, away from the noise and distractions of daily life. As the night went on, the fire eventually died down to glowing embers as we crawled into our tent. Even though I was tired from the long drive, I lay awake for a bit, listening to the tranquil sounds of the woods at night, leaves rustling in the breeze, crickets chirping, an owl hooting softly in the distance. Sometime later, I woke up startled. I could have sworn I heard something moving outside the tent. I stirred Tom awake and whispered if he had heard that. He listened for a moment, then said sleepily that it was probably just a raccoon or something and I should go back to sleep. Too tired to argue, I settled back down, figuring he was probably right. But then I heard it again, a snapping twig and what sounded like footsteps crunching quietly on the forest floor. This time, Tom heard it too. He sat up, suddenly wide awake, and grabbed our flashlight. He said he would go check it out, unzipping the tent flap. As Tom crept out of the tent, I felt my heart racing. I peered out into the darkness, straining my eyes to see anything moving. The glowing embers of our fire provided little light as Tom swept a beam of the flashlight around our campsite. Tom called back softly to me after a few moments that he did not see anything out there. I breathed a small sigh of relief, though I still felt unsettled. Tom came back inside the tent and zipped up the flap. He said it was probably just a curious raccoon checking us out and we should try to get some more sleep, lying back down. I nodded nervously and closed my eyes, but every little noise now seemed amplified and ominous. Eventually, I did drift off again. When I awoke at dawn, pale gray light was seeping into the tent. Tom was still softly snoring next to me. I carefully unzipped the flap and stepped outside to stretch my legs. The morning air was crisp and refreshing. Scanning the woods around our campsite, I didn't notice anything amiss initially. But then my eyes locked onto a figure standing unnaturally still about 30 feet away, half hidden behind a tree. I gasped audibly as I realized it was a man, just staring right at me. Adrenaline surged through me as I dashed back into the tent. I urgently woke Tom up, saying there was a strange man out there, just staring at us. Tom bolted upright and scrambled out of the tent, with me right behind him. But when we looked to where the figure had been, he was gone. The woods were still and quiet in the early morning light. I murmured that he had been right there, feeling perplexed and shaken. Tom put a comforting arm around me. He said whoever it was, he was clearly gone now, though he still glanced around warily. We slowly began packing up our camp, keeping a close eye on our surroundings, but we never saw the mysterious stranger again. Still, the encounter left us feeling deeply unsettled. We decided to head home early, eager to put the unexplainable events behind us. My name's Carlos. I'm originally from a small town in New Mexico, but moved out to the Pacific Northwest about 5 years ago. I work as an accountant at a firm in Portland. Got a wife named Maria and two young kids, a boy and girl. We're not big outdoor adventure types, but we try to take a family camping trip once a summer. Nothing too extreme. Just drive up to one of the state campgrounds in Oregon, set up a tent, cook some meat skewers and shrimp over the campfire. A nice way to unplug and spend time together as a family. But this last trip we took over the summer was different. Something happened that really rattled me and made me think twice about camping out there in the middle of nowhere. That camping trip with my family was supposed to be fun, but it turned out to be downright creepy. We drove up to the campground on a Friday afternoon. The kids were super excited to roast marshmallows and go fishing and all that good stuff. We found a nice spot to set up the tent and got a fire going. Had some meat skewers and shrimp for dinner, then settled in for the night. Around 3 a.m., I got woken up by nature's call, if you know what I mean. Had to take care of business, but the outhouse was like a 5-minute walk from our campsite. I didn't want to turn on a flashlight and wake everyone up, so I just stumbled out into the dark woods. I'm not gonna lie, I was freaked out. It was too dang quiet and pitch black. I could barely see 2 feet in front of me. I kept hearing little rustling sounds in the bushes, probably just raccoons or something, but it put me on edge. By the time I got to the outhouse, my heart was racing. Then things got even weirder. As I'm sitting there, I start hearing footsteps outside. Real deliberate sounding, like someone just pacing back and forth. I yelled out, "Hello?" But no one answered. Then I hear this tapping starting up on the walls of the outhouse in a real rhythmic pattern. Tap, tap, tap. Silence. Then, tap, tap, tap. Again. I'm thinking, what the heck is going on? Is someone messing with me? I decided I better get out of there quick. I swing open the door, ready to confront whoever it is, but no one's there. Just empty woods all around. Now I'm really freaked out. I hightail it back down the path towards our camp. The whole way, I can't shake the feeling that someone's following right behind me. But every time I whip around, I see nothing. By the time I make it back to the tent, I'm breathing hard and covered in goosebumps. I quietly sneak back into my sleeping bag, trying not to wake the family. But I barely slept a wink the rest of the night. Every little sound had me on high alert. I wondered if that could have been an animal or a person sneaking around our camp. I must have checked on the kids like 5 times to make sure they were safe. When morning finally came, I was relieved but still rattled. I didn't tell the family, didn't want to freak them out, but I couldn't stop thinking about it. Who or what was out there messing with me was unclear. It could have been some creep playing a prank or something more sinister. I'll tell you one thing. It really made me feel small and vulnerable out there in the wilderness at night. Like we were intruding on someone's territory. It gave me a healthy fear of the unknown, that's for sure. I don't think I'll be using any outhouses in the middle of the woods ever again.